I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from the hills behind Arroyo Grande, California. We're with Brian Talley of Talley Vineyards. Hi, Brian. Your family and you have been a part of the Central Coast world for a long, long time.
It really started for us here. My grandfather was actually born in Bradley in the very southern part of Monterey County, but he started farming here in Arroyo Grande back in 1948 when he founded Talley Farms.
And that's right here and across the road.
That's where we are. And one thing that I think a lot of folks don't realize is that farming is not only part of my heritage, but it's still a very important part of what we do.
In addition to grapes, what do you do in your farm operation?
Well, we grow about 50 different kinds of predominantly vegetables and a few fruit. We grow lemons and avocados, but we grow lots of leafy greens and peppers and tomatoes and radishes and carrots and just about every wonderful thing that I can think of that I want to eat. All of which thrives right here in our very moderate coastal climate.
Do the things that you grow, does that change with demand and market forces?
It does. You know, we launched a program about 5 years ago called Talley Farms Fresh Harvest that's a direct-to-consumer distribution model. And so that's a place where we have a lot of flexibility about what we want to grow. And we experiment with some things, but a lot of it's really driven by customer demand.
Shifting out of a product up in Northern California, or I told you I was up in Healdsburg, prunes were big at one time, and they're pretty much gone.
Yeah, though I still I have some friends and colleagues that grow prunes up in the Yuba City area, though the Napa Valley, from what I understand, was a huge prune area before it became so well known for wine grapes.
Speaking of wine grapes, in the Talley family lexicon history, when did that start? What was the game shift? And was it your dad that started doing that?
Yeah, so my dad, basically it all really started when we started buying land back in the late 60s and early 70s. And this place that we're sitting right now, we purchased back in 1974. And my dad started thinking about what we could do with these hillsides that surround us here. We couldn't grow vegetables on them, given the fact that wine grapes were so successful just to the south of us in Santa Barbara County and just to the north in the Edna Valley. I had a strong suspicion that wine grapes would work well here.
When you guys first started planting, was there some learning curve? Did you make some big mistakes at first and pull out stuff, or did you get it right out of the chute?
Interestingly, probably the biggest mistake that we made was, you know, of the five varieties that he planted, one was Cabernet Sauvignon, which is what just about everybody at that time grew pretty much everywhere in California. Didn't realize that this area was really too cool to ripen Cabernet Sauvignon. In fact, the wine that we made tasted pretty much exactly like the bell peppers that we were already famous for growing. There was some real insight that wasn't an appropriate variety here.
So that went away. And what did you get right? What was your home run?
The first home run was really Pinot Noir, and nobody had made truly world-class Pinot Noir in this particular area before we got here. And it turns out that Pinot Noir as well as Chardonnay both thrive in this very cool coastal climate that we have and these calcareous clay soils that we farm.
Interesting, because you think of Oregon more than California.
Well, a lot of folks do, and I've spent a lot of time in Oregon, but one of the things about coastal California, we've got this big cold Pacific Ocean that's just moderating our climate and really providing the perfect conditions for truly special Chardonnay and Pinot Noir.
And is it more a factor of cool nights that's the real operative?
You know, it's actually cool all the way around. And so, you know, we're blessed here in Arroyo Grande in particular with one of the most moderate climates in the world. And so, you know, we have a lot of days that are in the high temperatures in the mid-70s. And then it does cool off at night, typically about 55 or so degrees in the summertime. And what that all translates to is a very long growing season. To me, it's analogous to slow cooking, and we just develop beautiful flavors over that very long growing season.
But then again, on the other side, since you have a long hang time, probably get a little jittery pushing into winter time.
Certainly, the long season has its downsides. I mean, as a farmer, the longer that something is either on the vine or in the ground, the more susceptible it is to some kind of damage. I would say certainly one of the challenges we have here is this very early bud break, which typically occurs in late February or early March, really exposes us to a lot of spring frost. I don't care for that too much.
Talk to us about the breadth of your growing. What different varietals do you do today, and how many acres, and what does that translate into case production?
So altogether, we farm about 175 acres in six different vineyard sites, four of which are here in the Arroyo Grande Valley, two in the Edna Valley. Really, the prime driver for what we do is Chardonnay. That's, again, really thrives in this area, gives us very, very moderate yields, makes really great wine that we love to sell. Pinot Noir is by far our number one red variety. And then in addition to that, I do purchase some grapes, most notably Cabernet Sauvignon and related varieties from the Paso Robles area. So even though Cabernet wasn't successful here, you couldn't resist. I couldn't resist. You get about 40 or 45 miles up the road in the Santa Margarita area, and we can purchase some really special Cabernet Sauvignon.
Talk to us about your blending operation.
The blending that we do is among different vineyard sites or different blocks within the vineyard.
With the same varietal.
So really the highest level of what we do are these single vineyard bottlings of Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And so as much as possible, we're trying to make wine from a very, very small defined space, because that tends to make the most dramatic expression of each of these varieties.
And you talked about sourcing outside grapes. Somebody was telling me the other day that you also do some selling of your grapes. Is that true?
It is true, and that really goes back to the early years when we started growing grapes back in 1982, and my dad's vision when he started this was that he wanted to be predominantly a grape grower. The problem was nobody had heard of this region, and he felt like we needed to make some wine just to show people what we could do. Demand exceeded supply, and pretty soon we were using the vast majority of our grapes for our own wines. But I find that selling grapes, I really appreciate the feedback I get from other winemakers. It keeps us on our toes, and I really appreciate the collaboration that's inherent in that type of relationship.
One of the big issues today has to do with growing practices, with sustainable and organic, minimal intervention. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Sure. So, you know, our general philosophy here is really, in fact, our mission is to try to capture what's truly special about this remarkable place that we're farming. And so what that means in the winery is very, very minimal intervention in terms of winemaking. What it means in the vineyard is very careful, sustainable practices in our vineyards. So for instance, we are SIP certified. So that's a program that involves essentially an annual audit that takes place, where a group comes in and monitors our activities, then essentially rates us in terms of sustainable practices. Probably one of the most notable things, we don't use any herbicides here. We control all the weeds in the vineyard essentially with hand hoeing or with mechanical tillage. I think another important point to make in terms of our sustainability is we offset about 80% of the winery's power with solar electricity. We recycle all of our water, so we're able to use it whether we're irrigating our vines or for dust suppression. So the idea is really something that goes back to my heritage as a third generation farmer, is how do we sustain ourselves into the fourth generation.
Talk about beneficial insects and inviting owls to move in and things like that.
We do have a number of owl boxes throughout the six vineyard sites. Just about all those boxes have owls in them, which does my heart good, because it's nice to see those animals thriving. But I also appreciate the fact that they're doing a lot of work for us, because they're really keeping our gopher population in check, and gophers are a real big issue for us. In terms of beneficial insects, there's really a couple of a notable way that we promote that. We tend to use very, very soft, sustainable pesticides in the vineyard, and really we've adopted an integrated pest management protocol, which means we're only spraying if we've determined that it's necessary.
And real surgical application as needed in a specific block or location.
Exactly. The other important piece is that we maintain cover crops throughout the vineyards, so that creates a nice habitat for beneficial insects to basically overwinter. Another benefit that we have here is by operating such a diversified farming operation, it really provides an excellent host for just greater biodiversity in general. And I think that is a real benefit for the types of wines that we're trying to make.
There's a criticism of monocropping, of just growing one product in your fields. How do you mitigate that?
Well, in our case, we're operating a very diverse farming operation. So, you know, as we sit here, just...
Are those beans behind us?
No, we've actually got... That's a Yupik berry patch
that,
that will come into production really for the first time this spring. We've got Napa cabbage, which is one of our signature vegetables growing right out here in front of us. In fact, we have a lot of Napa cabbage growing on this ranch right now. But at any one time, there could be four or five different commodities growing here, all within this very close proximity of the Rincon Vineyard, coupled with just the natural vegetation that's growing here. It's basically pasture land and a little bit of oak woodlands.
So you've always been doing that, so you didn't even know what the outcome would have been if you just had a big, giant grape fields.
I just find it more interesting to have more diversity. I think diversity benefits us in many ways.
For your vegetable crops and the berries and whatnot, in addition to the Yupik, how do you distribute? Where would do they go? Central Coast mostly, or everywhere?
Our vegetable growing operations, there's really two key divisions to that. There are five commodities that we grow for the wholesale market that we're distributing really all over the country. That's Napa cabbage, spinach, cilantro, peppers, and Brussels sprouts.
So they could wind up in Boston.
They could, and people send me pictures of our produce on store shelves from really all over the country. And then we're growing about another 50 items that are really distributed primarily in San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara County. And that's our Tally Farms Fresh Harvest Program, which we're essentially delivering produce directly to consumers at nearly 50 different drop-off locations in the two counties.
And even more direct, I know it's not open today, but you have a farm stand right here at your winery.
I do, yeah. So we started about 2 years ago operating a seasonal farm stand, and that operates in the summertime on the weekends, and people come out and they get to choose exactly what they want. And when we have sweet corn and heirloom tomatoes and some of these berries, we've got these beautiful golden raspberries. Yeah, people flock to our farm stand.
That's really cool. Let's loop back to your wine world before we go, and let's talk wine for a moment. Your style, would it be described more in the European style of winemaking? Soft and gentle and not in your face?
Yes, and indeed. The way that we make our wines is really based on my vision for what fine wine should be, which is, again, an expression of the place and something that's made to pair with food. And so our wines tend to be very balanced, very elegant wines, and almost sort of a hybrid between very classic European flavors, which tend to be very subtle, very minerally, but with just a touch of that approachability and the ripeness that we just love about California Chardonnay.
So that fruitiness is right there.
Yeah, it's there, but I would say the other key element is we don't have too much oak getting in the way. We do use French oak in our fermentation and aging, but it tends to be more subtle because we're really trying to celebrate the farming that takes place and what's so special about this place.
Your Chardonnay, for example, would it be fair to describe it as light and bright and crisp?
That would be light, bright, crisp, but with just a little bit of toastiness in the finish and some richness that's coming from ideally grapes that are harvested at the peak moment of maturity and just a very judicious use of French oak barrels.
Mm-hmm. And probably begging to be accompanied by a meal, as we were alluding to earlier.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've got some of the best seafood in the world right here, things like Petrolli sole or white sea bass. Those are beautiful pairings with Chardonnay. And then when we've got local salmon, I just love that with our Pinot Noir.
Sounds like barbecue time.
Well, and Tom, I don't know if you know, I wrote a cookbook. And so.
No, I didn't. This is cool. Talk to us about that.
Sure. So it's just really a celebration of all the wonderful things that that grow here on our farm in this part of California. Lots of good seafood and paired with wines. It's just really, really it was a wonderful way for me to share my family's story with the world.
That's what I was going to ask. Are some of the recipes, grandma recipes that passed down through the generations in the Talley family.
The majority of recipes are recipes that I actually develop myself, but about a third of the recipes are either my grandmother's, my mother's, or other family members, and a few friends along the way. But it's just really all about, again, celebrating what is so special about this place and our family's history and heritage.
And it's a cookbook, but do you give suggestions for wine pairings in the book?
Pretty much every recipe in the cookbook has a wine pairing, and you know, there are a few desserts that probably go better with coffee, but certainly all of the savory dishes pair nicely with wine.
So you have a pretty darn cool tasting room here that to me just begs having fun and even doing some events. So this is a real popular place for people to just come and taste and hang out and have a good casual time.
Oh, it is, and that's something that I feel very strongly that just because we make really special wine here doesn't mean that we can't welcome people in a very fun and casual way. And I think a lot of folks are surprised at that because maybe they've been put off over the years with sort of a snooty wine experience. And here I like to open the door and welcome people in and really share what I think is special about this place, again, in a fun and informal way.
So no fear if you don't have your own lexicon of wine expertise. Come out here and just have a good time and feel welcome.
Absolutely. And as far as I'm concerned, the most important thing that somebody can know about wine is what they like. As much as possible, we're trying to give folks what they like. And we've got a diversity of wines that we produce here. And there's no such thing as a dumb question. And we just want everybody who comes to feel what I feel when I come to work every day. And that this is truly a special place to be. And we just want people to leave with that feeling.
Since you're a farmer of the soil in more than grapes, but in vegetables and fruits and whatnot, I have this feeling that you've got to do some food and wine events out here.
We do some cool events. Probably the most popular and the one that engages most of the public is we have a concert series in the summertime called Tunes at Talley. Those are on Sundays, and we just set up a band. It's complimentary. People bring their own picnics, or we have a food truck, and people just get to hang out and, you know, really enjoy what's special about this place.
Is that an excuse because Brian loves music so much?
I do love music, as do many of the folks that work here. But it's also a way to introduce wine to people that, again, maybe have a misconception about what it can and should be.
Going back to the 70s, driving by here, there's a classic old farmhouse. It's literally a part of the history of the Central Coast.
Yeah, the Rincon Adobe, I mean, that's a very, very important symbol of our estate. It's been on our wine label since our very first vintage back in 1986. When we restored it as our original tasting room in 1988, at that point it was the oldest continuously inhabited house in San Luis Obispo County. And to this day, I mean, it's really the symbol of Talley Vineyards. It's the first thing that folks see when they get here, and it's an adobe house, so it's made of the earth of this place. And I think as such, again, it's a very apt symbol for this place.
What's it used for today?
So now we actually use it for offices upstairs. Our direct-to-consumer team is there, and then downstairs we use it essentially for members of our wine club and for special tasting events. Those folks that are in our wine club can do some tasting in the original tasting room.
Brian Talley, thanks again. What a great day in paradise.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to talk to you.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the hillside country on the outskirts of Rio Grande, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.